The Columbus Quincentennial in 1992 sparked a renewed interest in looking at the history of this country from the Native American point of view. Columbus never made it to Wisconsin. But Jean Nicolet did in 1634. Technically, we should wait another 141 years until the Nicolet Quincentennial to learn about the people he met here. Or should we?
Discovered? The Menominee had been living here almost 5,000 years before Nicolet landed. Celebrate? In the 1800s, the Winnebago people were loaded into boxcars like cattle and shipped out west. Hundreds of my people died. The Menominee literally had their reservation canceled, their rights as Native American people terminated, the treaties ignored. But our people, who met Nicolet in 1634, the Ho-Chunkra, or Winnebago, and the Omaha-Nominewuk, the Menominee, are alive and well and living in Wisconsin. But it hasn't always been easy.
But they've managed to remain, despite the influx of non-Indians who followed in the wake of Nicolet.
We know that this is our origin, that this is our place of our creation of the Winnebago people, and we call this Mogoshuch, Red Banks.
At the time when this Nicolet landed here, he gave us all kinds of goods and everything that a person needs to make a home of copies of the white man world. The chief thought, this man that came, the God sent him here with all his equipment for the Indian people.
The details of Nicolet's 1634 visit to the Red Banks coastland of Lake Michigan's Green Bay are lost in the mists of time. Nicolet had been sent by Samuel de Champlain to find a way around the Winnebago, who were a barrier to French fur trade expansion. It was a low-budget expedition. Nicolet was the only European, accompanied by a few Hurons. A Winnebago told anthropologist Paul Radin one account in 1910.
No, I just got away. I drew it on it.
The Indians said they are thunderbirds. They have never heard a report of a gun before that time, and that is why they thought they were thunderbirds.
The Winnebago had a fierce reputation. They had killed an earlier expedition of Ottawas who had come to them on behalf of the French.
French did not know what tobacco was, and therefore did not know what to do with it. Some of the Winnebagoes poured tobacco on their head.
Tobacco is a gift from the Creator, and it is used in a respectful manner, sometimes to show honor and respect, and to ask for a safe return from battle or a long journey. I hear people say sometimes, what if the native people of this land had joined forces and turned back the first European invaders? But for us, that really wasn't an option. The future foretold that one day, the fair-skinned hairy ones would come, and when they arrived, they would be tired and in need of food and shelter. We were instructed to provide or assist these people with their physical needs.
Each of the chief men made a feast for him. And at one of these banquets, they served at least 6 core beavers. The peace was concluded, he returned to the Hurons.
The French were soon after preoccupied by conflicts with the Iroquois to the east, but they didn't forget those furs.
For millions of other Native Americans, first contact with Europeans was via their germ culture. By the time Nicolet arrived, European diseases had spread north from the Spanish settlements. Some estimates say as many as 95% of our Native American people were killed by these European invaders.
The Europeans had developed immunities to these diseases, though carried through person-to-person contact, they had their origins in European domestic animals. Native Americans had few domestic animals, thus no immunity.
Wasn't there a science fiction movie, something like that, where invisible microbes defeated the invaders? Only in our case, it was the invaded who suffered. The Winnebago people, after Nicolet's visit, suffered a great epidemic. One quarter of the Menominee were killed in an 1834 smallpox epidemic. Those who survived saw their world changing.
When the French returned in the 1650s and 60s, they brought hatchets, kettles, and glass beads to trade for beaver pelts. Unlike Columbus and his compatriots 150 years earlier, the French never enslaved or demanded gold payments from the indigenous people. But they did want furs to satisfy the European demand for beaver hats. And in the end, this transformed the Winnebago and Menominee way of life. In 1634, the Winnebago had one large village at Red Banks and relied heavily on gardening for food. Across Green Bay lived the Menominee, the wild rice people. Over the next 20 years, many tribes from the east and north were driven into Wisconsin by Iroquois hostilities in the east.
But our people didn't call their land Wisconsin. It's sort of like Nicolet's Landing. No one's really sure of the details. There are at least 17 Indian and non-Indian explanations for the word. In 1673, someone told Father Marquette that he was traveling on the Meskousing River. It wasn't until the 1820s that the name was applied to the land. The Menominees have been here almost 5,000 years. That means Wisconsin's only about 3% of their history. Trade goods from the French were given on credit, usually in the fall of the year, to be paid off in furs in the spring. The Winnebago were drawn away from Green Bay and their later village on Lake Winnebago when Portage and Prairie du Chien became trade centers. The Menominee also broke into smaller fur-seeking bands, abandoned their old patterns of village life, and moved nearer to trading posts.
Trade with the non-Indians continued when the British took over from the French in 1763. After the War of 1812 ended, the United States turned its attention to the land of the Winnebago and Menominee. First, they disrupted the fur trade pattern the tribes had come to depend on. Then, they started to settle in the area in large numbers.
As I stand here and look at all of the dancers that are here at the Black River Powwow, it's especially gratifying to see that we're still here. We've had a long struggle to remain here in Wisconsin ever since 1634. We look back today and wonder why Native American people gave up their lands. Well, we as Winnebago people feel that we haven't. The Treaty of 1837 is a treaty that we dispute because the people who were involved in the signing of that treaty had no authority to be there.
In earlier treaties signed in 1829 and 1832, the Winnebago had given up their land south and east of the Wisconsin River. But the U.S. government representatives were so anxious to get the 1837 treaty signed that they coerced an unauthorized group of Winnebago men to sign it. Among them were the respected Thunder Clan chiefs Yellow Thunder and Karamoni. But of the 20 signers, only two were from the Bear Clan, the Winnebagos responsible for land negotiation. The government ignored their protests. 3 years later, in 1840, the Winnebago were forcibly removed, many on riverboats, from their ancestral Wisconsin lands to Iowa.
But there was always a group of Winnebagos that made their way back to the homelands here in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Band of Winnebagoes are descendants of the renegades or rebel faction of the Winnebago tribe that refused to move out west as the reservations were established for them. Dandy and Yellow Thunder, co-leaders of the Winnebagoes living in the 1837 session area, led our people back here.
Over the next 30 years, the Winnebago were removed four more times, yet they always made their way back despite severe hardships.
They were put in a corral by soldiers, and then they were put on a train to go west. And the train would stop in the evening, and they'd kill a cow, and then they'd cut it in half. They'd just put the whole thing in, hide and all, into a cauldron. And that's what the folks ate.
We are talking about presidents. Oh, we all thought Abraham Lincoln was just such a wonderful president because he's freed the slaves and says, Uncle John, hey, I don't want to hear you mention that. He's the one that removed our people from here during his presidency.
By the time Lincoln was elected president, the Menominee were settling in at their reservation along the Wolf River. They, too, had resisted removal from Wisconsin.
At one time, the Menominees claimed 9.3 million acres of land in an area from approximately Milwaukee over to the Wisconsin River, eastern part of Wisconsin, eastern half of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Now we have approximately 230,000 square acres of land. It's about 1/89 of what we originally claimed as our ancestral homeland.
Oshkosh was the principal chief of the Menominees during the treaty period. He negotiated brilliantly on their behalf, partially because he was an expert at stalling. This was very evident in 1848, when the tribe relinquished the remainder of their Wisconsin land in exchange for 600,000 acres in Minnesota.
But then our Chief Oshkosh sent a delegation out to that Crow Wing country in Minnesota. They were gone 3 years.
This maybe might be a key to what has helped us survive
all of the onslaughts
on our culture and our land. We give the appearance that we're going along with this and we like it, like Chief Oshkosh putting on the hat and going to Washington, and everybody's thinking, well, boy, we got these people now, you know, and it's been a kind of a sneaky resistance, a passive resistance, if you want to call it.
And they come back, they said, that's not a place for us to go. There's constant war out there, there's no game, there's no trees, there's no rivers. So Chief Oshkosh said, we're going to stay here, we're not going to move.
The Menominee leaders had another place in mind for their people, a portion of their ancestral land west of their Green Bay village site, Wolf River Country.
And at that time, it was deemed by the old government agents to be a place only fit for Indians to live on. And you look at the land today, Menominee Reservation, and compare it to the rest of the state of Wisconsin, you'll see that those people were smarter than what they were given credit for. Conglomeration of rivers, lakes, game, hilly country, forest, species of trees, herbs, stuff like that, and medicines that they knew what they were doing. And there's no place like this that exists in the whole country anymore.
And they looked around and they said, well, here's, well, we got to make a living off. We got to make a go of it. Mm-hmm. We got to cut from the east and cut to the west, but we got to do it at such a speed. So when we get to the west, we always have timber to cut. But to say that at such a time when people viewed the resource as inexhaustible is just, it's kind of mind-boggling to me.
It was the Paul Bunyan era in the rest of Wisconsin. Non-Indian lumber interests, known as the Pine Ring, were clear-cutting most of the northern part of the state. They soon had their eye on Menominee lands.
Since 1854, there have been 17 known attempts by outside interests that wanted to come in and take this forest and cut it. And the tribe has resisted each and every one of those. They had that vision into the future that this is what they wanted. What you see here today is what they wanted for their grandchildren's grandchildren.
Most of the Winnebago people who lived in the 1829 and 1832 land session areas ended up on a Nebraska reservation. But those who lived in the 1837 session area resisted removal. The right to claim land under the Homestead Act was extended to these Wisconsin Winnebago in 1874.
The Wisconsin Winnebago were finally recognized by the U.S. government as being residents of the land that we'd called home for hundreds, even thousands of years.
120 years later, the Winnebago and Menominee will soon carry their traditions into the 21st century. They are sovereign nations, yet their people have also participated in the American experience.
Here at Menominee, you see, as we have our processional, our grand entry, and we have the Veterans Dance. Here at the Menominee Reservation, Menominee County, we have the largest group of veterans of any county in the state on a per capita basis. All the men that carry in the flags are veterans. Most of them are combat veterans and served in World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Panama, Desert Storm. Some are also veterans of some of the other conflicts that we've had. Wounded Knee, the Novitiate Takeover, Oka, some of the other conflicts that took place between the tribes and the governments, as we exercised our rights as human beings to exist on this planet.
It seems ironic that a people who have been so harshly treated by the federal government would also be some of its most dedicated soldiers. Perhaps the warrior spirit of their Menominee and Winnebago ancestors fuels this patriotism. A different facet of the American system is enthusiastically supported by Menominee Ada Deer.
We live in a very dynamic society. It's very important for people to understand that we can speak up, we can speak out, and we can take action. And the Menominee Restoration Act is concrete demonstration of a group of citizens working through the system to achieve justice.
Since 1973, we've made some major strides with our forest and our lands. You see now that as you look through the forest, we've increased the number of standing board feet in our forest. You see how we use the forest here at the powwow as we make that spiritual connection with Mother Earth by dancing here under the trees, the native trees to our land. As we dance, we keep in mind that if it wasn't for these trees and the plants that grow here, the land that we have that's ours is Menominee land, that we would not be anybody. We would not be a people.
Menominee history of forest management is a unique blend of people's conviction and legislation. This long-term forest management, Menominee seems to demonstrate well here that you can have spiritual rejuvenation, you can have economic base, you can have recreation.
The only problem is because we're more or less an island of timber in an ocean of cleared land, we no longer have those big, broad state influences of fire and the rest of it. So we have to mimic Mother Nature.
This enhanced satellite photo dramatically illustrates how the 222,000-acre rectangle of the Menominee Forest differs from the land around it. It is considered the finest example of biodiversity in the entire Great Lakes region. The vision of the elders 7 generations ago lives and breathes.
We received recently, this past year, from the scientific group in California, an award for our environmental and sustained yield management of the forest. For the last 135 years, we've been marketing timber from this reservation, and it's all been sustained yield. And that's the way it will continue.
The elders' beautifully simple idea of long ago to balance harvest with annual growth is an official forestry term now, sustained yield.
Back in 1854, when the tribe surveyed their ancestral lands, they estimated that they had 1,300,000,000 board feet of timber here. Today, we have 1,700,000,000 board feet. They've cut in volume 2.25 billion board feet. Plus their diameters and their species composition haven't changed. What if more of this same land ethic would have been applied on more of that original ancestral land? It would be a very different appearing northern Wisconsin than from what we know today.
There's 16 forest cover types that exist in the Lake States. Menominee has 14 of those forest cover types. It takes hundreds of years to develop a forest and to develop different age structures. A view like this kind of gives you a mosaic of what we have created in the last 135 years of management on Menominee. There are big trees, big pine trees. There are small clear cuts, small even age forests, small non-even age forests. Different height classes support different animals and birds and insects and all the rest of it. These are the areas that a lot of people come for their spiritual type rejuvenation, because you can look around. It's very carpet-like and soft and quiet in these type of forests. These stands here are what people, I think, perception of a pristine forest is. We're in a pine stand that has 100% crown closure. You look at them and you forget that they're a living organism, and that at one time they were seedlings, and that they're a living organism, and then they're gonna die too. You're gonna have to make some hard decisions. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your point of view, this one happens to be coming to maturity during my tenure here.
Many of Menominee's magnificent white pines are nearing the end of their growth cycle. But the conditions that created these stands no longer exist. There is no assurance that new white pine will grow up to replace them. Marshall took us to a stand that looked equally magnificent when he was a boy.
The trees are about 200, maybe 190 to 200 years old in this particular area. If you had time to look around you, you'd see stumps all over the place where the trees, or root systems where the trees had been blown over or tipped over or salvaged. In 1958, this particular area had 68,000 board feet of white pine here. Today it has somewhere as around 18 to 10,000 board feet. So the stand has really changed dramatically since 1958. When you look around, hemlock is taking over this. Hemlock, beech, and hard maple are taking over this site as the pine die in it. Nothing is static. Everything is cyclic. We're going around on this plant succession. These big trees, they died, they changed. New species are coming into being here.
But the Menominee people love their white pine forests and don't want all of them to be replaced by other kinds of trees. To fulfill this vision, Marshall looks down rather than up.
Lily of the Valley is a key indicator for growing white pine. So that's why we're putting a lot of effort to maintain white pine on this particular area.
All this is not meant to suggest that the Menominee are afraid to cut down a tree. But when they do, it's carefully planned.
What you see here is a single tree selection system of harvesting. We marked this individual tree here based on what we call single tree selection, where we remove the high risk and the low vigor trees first. Menominee's philosophy on single tree selection is to cut the worst and leave the best. And eventually, after we do that, you are going to be cutting towards the top of the batting order more good trees, because you will have improved the quality of the forest.
This unique selective type of logging requires care and finesse when the trees are cut and removed. Special trails are built for the skidders. Sawyers like Bob Johnson don't complain about the extra work, maybe because he owns the forest, along with 8,500 other Menominee tribal members.
I've worked in private in the National Forest Service at Nicolet National Forest, and you got bigger timber here. If you want to keep continuous forest, I think sustained yield is the only way to go. And that's the way I was brought up from grandfather on.
This will be it, Bob.
The advantages, of course, with the tribe owning the forest is that everyone has a say in it. The young kids are taught in the schools to have respect for the forest products and the land. I think the land ethic here is just almost second nature.
Unlike most forestry operations, the Menominee Mill does not dictate that certain species be cut just because their current market value is high. Biological diversity, wildlife, aesthetic values, and concern for future generations are more important than big profits today.
We want to make a profit, but we also want to be able to employ the people around here.
We have about 165 people here, here and at the Forestry Center. There's approximately another 180 employed in the forest operations. If you've had an opportunity to visit the plant and tour through it, you'll find that it's been computerized, laser lights. We have quality control working now and reinstituted some programs, training programs. And well, we've had people come from the European countries, Japan, and I believe from quite a few people from Canada, our neighbors to the north, viewing the reservation and the sustained yield practices. We have to prove that we can handle our own affairs, and we're very capable of it. The forest operation here and our forestry center and operations in Kachina is one of the finest in the country, and I'm proud to say that. I'm proud of the people and the men and the women who work down there. And with our tribal people here who are well-educated and who have sound ethics of the Aldo Leopold kind, this is an ecological paradise with respect to forest yields, flora and fauna, water, habitat.
Their forest has been a key element of Menominee survival in Wisconsin. It has sustained them because they have sustained it, attuning themselves to the cycles of the natural world. The tiny lily of the valley points the way for the towering white pine. Perhaps tiny Menominee has lessons to teach the world surrounding it. Historically, the Wisconsin Indian tribes have been the guinea pigs for many federal Indian policy experiments.
It's just something that you can't comprehend happening, but it did happen. We were terminated.
The Menominee people literally faced the Terminator in the 1950s and 60s, when the reservation status of their land was canceled in an effort to make them over as non-Indians. The Wisconsin Winnebago also fought for a change in federal policy. We'll learn more about these 20th century Indian battles in part two of Since 1634, in the wake of Nicolay. We'll be right back.